extra time is exactly how I find out what's going on in the MLS.
Get lost. Get lost.
Maybe this podcast has influenced me a little bit as well.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here.
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental Tire from the AT&T 5G Virtual Studios. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partner in soccer, David Goss.
Uno.
Just the two of us. We'll
old
make
school,
it
baby.
To
Bring
decision.
It back.
Yeah. What happened, man? Like, we have a whole squad, and they're all gone.
We're the crayon flag of Extra Time.
Exactly. You can count on two people on this show. Dave and I, and actually three, Anders. I'm sorry, Anders, but you can't count on Charlie because as soon as CBS hits him up and says, oh, hey, Charlie, you can go to Liverpool to Anfield for UEFA Champions League and, like, interview Klopp and, you know, Trent Alexander-Arnold, he's like, peace, guys. You mean nothing to me. You're dead to me. I'm on a plane. I'm gone. I won't be back. You'll never see me again.
Exclusive report, though. Jurgen Klopp interview on Extra Time Radio next week. Because him and Charlie are clearly best friends now.
Exactly.
Said nice things.
We've gone to the Barcelona. Well before. We're going to go to the Liverpool well. Maybe the U.S. national team well next week. We'll tease that a little bit. Of course, Charlie will be back. We're joking here. We miss him. But it'll be just us two to go through Decision Day 2021. We are here. Every team has played 33 games. Every team has but one more opportunity to figure out where they sit in the hierarchy ahead of the MLS Cup playoffs. Now's the time. Get it done or go home and train and don't have games to play and look at the playoffs and think, God, I wish we were there.
I'd like to issue an early congratulations to Atlanta United for qualifying for the playoffs.
Yeah.
I'm offended that we're not saying that they're in the playoffs. And therefore, I am saying they're in. And if they're not in, well, that's on you. Because if you lose the FC Cincinnati as much as you have to not get in, that's your fault.
I think they'd have to lose by 7 goals and have other results go the other direction. They backed into this one. We'll talk about that in just a little bit. It was not a vintage performance from Atlanta United against the Red Bulls. But look, we've promoted it. We're going to continue to promote it because Extra Time, it's not officially under our banner, but in a lot of ways it is. The live second screen watch-along show on Decision Day from 3:30 p.m. Eastern. That is when the Eastern Conference games start, but you all know that they start at 3:38 because that's the way things work with pre-games on national TV. We will start, and we'll fill those 8 minutes, and we'll fill all like 5 hours after that as well. We're going to be live throughout the entirety of Decision Day. Every moment.
What's your TV set up?
Every goal. Oh, I've had my TV set up all year, man.
How many screens?
So I have three main screens outside of the main computer screen here.
Yeah.
I believe that there is going to be like seven games is the most that we can have. So if I can get four split on the TV hanging above my monitors and then have two games on each big monitor, the ones that I really want to watch closely, and then I have you guys in front of me and Twitter and everything else I need, I should be good. Now, that doesn't account for the fact that I only have two eyes.
Yeah.
So we got to figure
out. I'm surprised how low Twitter came on the list of where you're going to need things and where it goes. I've watched games with you. I've been in the studio with you before. You are game Twitter and then the rest of the game.
Yeah. Now, I'm a little bit distracted. I will give you that. A little. I got the phone here. I'll keep it rolling.
I've got two screens, TV, monitor, my laptop. I could bring a second TV into this room.
I might do that.
That feels aggressive, but it might be necessary. I'm very excited for what's going to happen. I think that we've had years where we've built up and then there's actually not that much that has to happen. This is not one of those years in either conference. And I think the movement throughout the day is going to be so wild. And there's games where both teams have everything to play for. And then there's games where there's one team. And I think those are kind of the bogey ones where, right? That's where like a San Jose pops up on you. Because why not? Cade Cowell's going to come and show off. And
yeah.
So is Wondolowski. And then those are the moments where you're like, now I got to find a fifth screen to bring in.
Exactly.
That
by the way, your trainer just said, hey, guys, look, I've got the earbud in and so-and-so just scored. We're out of the playoffs. Like all of a sudden we were in and now we have 5 minutes to fix this. Can we do it? You can watch with us. We'll have live goal alerts on the second screen watch along show. We will have the live standings. So this is really designed for those of you that are watching your team or watching the national TV game and just want to be a little bit focused on that, don't have the crazy setup, but you want to know in real time exactly what's happening, and you basically just want to hang out with us. So fire it up on your phone, on your iPad, on your computer, whatever it is. Have that be your second screen, and we'll do decision day together.
So you don't need five TVs. The point Correct. Is you can watch your team, yeah. and then we are going to do all the rest of the work for you. And we're really going to BS about MLS, which is what we love to do. And you can come be a part of that.
Yeah, the reactions are going to be the best part, I want to say. Of like, I'm not watching this game, but you are. And you start yelling and I have to figure out why. It's going to be a good time. Coming up on today's show, let's get into it. What's at stake in every single one of these decision day matches? There is something in all but really two, I think. So we'll go through that. Matt Turner is going to join us. Talk Revs season, their MLS Cup chances, the point record, the shield, and the rebrand that dropped this Thursday morning. So he'll be here in just a second. We're going to talk U.S. national team with him as well, because there was also a roster that dropped. So we'll get our thoughts on that. And, of course, you can go check out Doyle's thoughts at MLSsoccer.com and the MLS app on this roster from Greg Berhalter. Some big news there. No John Brooks, for instance, and some big guys coming in, or some guys that people might not be super happy about, depending on your perspective. Well, we'll break that down. And also, Tom Boger has a wonderful decision day breakdown at MLS Soccer. Playoff spots, seating, golden boot, all that stuff, all wrapped up for you in one nice consumable package. Let's get to it. Let's start this thing off. Yeah, you know how you're going to watch it, I assume, at this point. But if you don't, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, you go fire up ESPN. ESPN is going to be your spot for Nashville, New York Red Bulls. That's the game that they flexed into, that they decided was the one that they wanted. The Red Bulls are playing for their playoff lives in Nashville. Meanwhile, Nashville is trying to play for maximum seeding in the East. At this point, they are guaranteed a home playoff game, at least one, but they're trying to get in position to get as many as possible en route to perhaps meeting the Revs. And if not, they would host all their games on the way to MLS Cup. You will also fire up ESPN Plus if you have second screens for all the other games. And of course, you will get that second screen watch along going on Facebook or YouTube or on MLSsoccer.com or the MLS app.
Watch us.
Yeah. Tune into us. That's what you should do. Let's start with that game in the East. But first, the stakes. Three spots remain for six clubs. Atlanta are not technically in, but on extra time's scale, they're in, which would make it even more incredible if they don't get in, by the way. Oh, my God. Orlando, not in. New York Red Bulls, not in. Montreal, not in. Patrice Bernier will join us in a second to talk about that. DC United, not in. Columbus, not in. Probably not going to get in. Their goal differential and win tiebreakers are really bad. So while there is a universe where they could, they probably won't. Seeds 2 through 4 up for grabs. That's because, of course, the Revs. Philly and Nashville will have at least one home game. Meanwhile, NYCFC is trying to hang on to theirs. And basically, any team could jump them, I think, depending on goal differential. Yeah. I mean, New York can't make up 14 goals, so the Red Bulls would not be able to. But Orlando or Atlanta could, based on wins. Let's get into it. Let's start with that first game. Nashville, New York Red Bulls, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN, ESPN Deportes, a win for Nashville. They won't finish any lower than the 3 seed, maybe the 2 seed, depending on results. The Red Bulls could still make it with a loss, but if they draw, they are in. I'm going to do my predictions in the East at the end of this segment. Okay. What are you looking at from this game, and can we just talk about that performance midweek against Atlanta? Because Atlanta might not have shown anything, but the Red Bulls also showed they have very little creativity. Goal scoring, to me, is a huge worry for them. Defensively, style of play, I feel a lot more confident. They're going to punish people in that way.
I get what you're saying in terms of goal scoring. I think the finishing is there. It's the creativity and the chance creation with them. That's where I think this Nashville matchup's interesting, because you look at a Nashville team that has the pieces, that is the best defensive team in the league last year and has been at times this year. On the flip side, they've opened games up and they've had 3-3 games and they've had insanity. And so when you look at a Nashville team that sort of has nothing to lose and everything to win, I think they're going to open up and go for it. And I think that fits perfectly into the Red Bulls' hands. They know who they are now. That's what the Red Bulls have learned. Over the course of this year, they've had moments where they played like themselves. The last 2 months, they have played large segments of every game in their identity. They've been aggressive. They've put it high up the field. They've gone for second balls. They've pressed as a team. That's what's led them on this run to the playoffs. And now they know that, and they're not going to shy away from that. They're not going to fall away from that. Gerhard Stuber talked about it. He said, now the segments of games where we play our style is the most that it's been since I've been here. So I think you're going to see a game in which Nashville opens it up and goes for it, and that leads to complete chaos, which, one, fits the Red Bulls a little bit better, and two, fits us pretty well, I think, as neutral fans.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, this is an opportunity for Nashville to kind of, I mean, to reiterate to themselves, to their fans, to the rest of the league, that they aren't just sort of like, I don't know, draw experts, that they can find a middle ground between the defensive stoutness that they have shown as well as the attacking explosiveness that they have shown, especially or exclusively perhaps when Hani Mukhtar is on his game. On the flip side, man, I watched that Red Bulls game and I'm like, if they aren't going to create a chance on you in sort of the press moment where it's a 50-50 that pops to the right spot and you go super vertical or direct, and, you know, Caden Clark, we talked about this, almost had that moment. He was just offside. Other than that, they don't have much in terms of chance creation. Like, if the other team doesn't open up completely or doesn't make boneheaded mistakes in the wrong parts of the field, it sort of feels like it's just like Kyle Duncan overlaps and hopeful balls.
But that's worked, right? Because that gets them at 0-0. And the belief that they have, similar to, we're going to talk about the men's national team in a little bit, similar to what they have, is it will come eventually. And it didn't against Atlanta, for sure. But that's a playoff game. If that's a playoff game, now you're going to extra time at home, right? And you could potentially go to penalties, whatever it is. I think for the Red Bulls, they feel like they are there. They are toe-to-toe with every team in this league up until the final few minutes of the game. And they think that breakthrough will eventually come. And the averages over the last 2 months have said that that's true. And I don't think they're scared of that, which is an interesting way to go into games at this point of the season. Because I don't think they fear a tight game. They don't fear a 1-0 win or a 0-0 going late in the game. And that is something that not every team is completely comfortable with.
How would, if they don't make it, the Red Bulls, on like the failure scale, where would this be? It would be their first in many years, over a decade, I believe, not being in the playoffs.
Yeah, I think it'd be pretty low. It's a rebuild for them. And this was year one. And so for the run they went on, no matter what happens on Sunday, they're going to leave and say, we see the direction it's going in. And it took a large part of the year. And a lot of the fan base will tell you, well, we don't think the quality is there. And so they did as much as they could with what they had. But you can definitely see the pieces that they're going to build around next year. Sean Nealis was phenomenal. Andre Reyes has been good. Maybe Cornell comes back. You've got a lot of that midfield locked in, whatever happens with Caden Clark. And I think while you haven't seen perfection from Klamala, you know my rule about foreign players coming into this league. Next year is where you're looking to see him hit. So I think for Red Bull fans and I think for the organization, there's a ton of positives no matter what happens on Sunday. But if they're able to sneak the playoff stretch continuing through these 2 years where they fired Chris Armas and then brought Struber in during a rebuild, that would be pretty big, I think, for the franchise's history.
You got to trademark the like wait a year thing.
Yeah, I'm going to.
You need to.
I'll get an attorney. I'll just walk around with t-shirts that say wait a year.
Yeah, hey, next year. Next year's his.
I'll tell you in a year.
You got to sell that to some agents. That's what you need to do.
Yeah,
that's sure. That's the real moneymaker right there. We said it. New York with a draw are in. Why are they in with a draw? Because Orlando and Montreal face off. So there's no way that both those teams can take 3 points. If you get a draw, you now have 48. DC, Columbus cannot catch you at that point. So all it would take is a draw for the New York Red Bulls. Let's keep it going here. And we go to arguably a bigger game, I would say, in the Eastern Conference, because it really is basically for playoff lives, Montreal, Orlando, 3:30 p.m. Eastern, ESPN Plus. It's an AT&T 5G call to the field. Patrice Bernier, what's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Hey, big win last night. Huge win. Must win. Had to do it.
Yeah, huge win. They were on a do or die situation, especially the last week wasn't great. Drawn Orlando, lost points to Toronto, even Philly at home. So at Red Bulls, so they needed this win and they did it well at home. It was a chilly night, but at least they got the people warm by the end of the game and with the 3 points, with a final. We have to say it's a final on Sunday against Orlando.
And it's kind of a rematch here. You mentioned it. What did you see in that previous game that you think will apply here? How will How will Wilfried Nancy approach this? How should he approach
it? Yeah, because, you know, this is a three-legged series against Orlando, because the first one is the 4-2 win, but Nani had a red card, two red cards in the game. You felt that Orlando had a sense of revenge in the second game. First half, they were really over Montreal the whole half. It could have been 2 or 3 for Orlando. Montreal managed it and came back into the game. It's 1-1. But now you're playing for the playoff spot, at least in between the two teams. I think the physicality of Orlando was a major factor in the second game. And now Montreal, let's not forget, Wanyama was not there in the second game. I think just him, his physicality, I think he covers for the most of the team. So it's going to be interesting to see what Wilfried Nancy tries to match. Will he try to match Piet and Wanyama in the midfield to win the midfield in terms of volume of recovering the ball and allowing Mihaljevic, Torres to express themselves a bit more, or trying to dictate it by possession, which has been their forte this season, and maybe have Hamdi, who started on Wednesday against Houston, and really having more offensive or creative players, so that they did like against Houston, just push it forward and put Orlando on the back heels. So it's going to be a big matchup, and I'm afraid because Daryl DK is doing well at the end of the season, and the CF Montreal back line, usually against tall power forwards, seems to have difficulty. It's going to be a good matchup, but it's in Montreal, and if I was a player, I'd love to be playing this game because it's do or die, and you're going to play, it's going to be around, 10 degrees here? It's for you guys.
Oh, my God.
40 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, wait, here's
Celsius.
So it's chilly. Having talked to some Houston guys, Zarek Valentin and Fafa Biko, they were like, man, this is cold here. I said, yeah, you guys live in some warm weather here. It's this is the type of weather, and it could be colder. So who knows?
So we mentioned the question marks are in central midfield. You talked about how you'd love to play in this game. Do we get Patrice Bernier in starting central midfield maybe? Set the tone early on in this one?
Yeah, I wish. I wish I was 30, 32 or 33, because these are the games you want to play. You know, especially after this season for CF Montreal. Young team, new coach, most people didn't really know about. And I was telling people here in Montreal, if at the beginning of the year, with all the new faces, new coach, you said that you would be playing a game to go to the playoffs, you would buy that ticket. You would say, yep, that's a good season for me. And so they're there and they're playing at home. So this is the best time to, if you could say, sell this new team for the fan base to jump on new prospects like Mihaljevic, Kamal Miller, Joachim Torres, and so on. These are the moments you need to generate. And if I go back in the past, people, what do they remember here in Montreal? The 2015 final loss in Champions League, the 2016 semifinals. When you're playing these big games, you leave moments. And this is an opportunity for this team to leave a great moment on their season and to say, we started well and we're finishing strong. Because the last few weeks have been a bit more gray zone where people were starting to doubt. Yeah, we're young, inexperienced, taking goals at the last minute. But now they have a chance to finalize their season with a very strong finish.
So that's the positive. I don't want to take you too negative, but just from the inside and from the city, give us a point of view of if it doesn't go well on Sunday, if this team doesn't make the playoffs, as you said, the expectations, I think they've still passed from what you thought preseason. What'll be the story of this year? What'll be the feeling in the fan base?
The feeling is, look, because it was a rebrand year, the fan base is a bit divided between what was before and what they're trying to build now. Now on the field, they quickly told you, oh, Wilfried Nancy's team is on the forefront. They're defending front foot. They're attacking. Mason Toy at the beginning of the year was really the striker. They were able to catch some teams off guard, started the season against a win against Toronto, so there's no better way than that. But then slowly towards the end of the year, even though it was positive, you know, us human beings, we remember what the present. We don't usually remember that far back. So people were starting to say this is just like any of the other Montreal teams. We're losing the games in the dying seconds, drop points where you should have. And they're forgetting that this team does not have a stellar offensive DP. You're having a lot of young players that are gelling together. with a coach that most people knew as an assistant but didn't know what was the brand of football he's going to be able to put. And now that they're in the conversation of the playoffs, it's finishing a little bit more optimistic. People are probably going to be like, we had some points we could have gotten easier. When you look at it, Toronto game, Philly, you would be talking about finishing fourth or fifth in their first year. So Montreal is a drama city. We're always going to be talking about what could have been better. But you have to look at it this whole season, playing in Florida for 3 months and still managing to get results. For me, this is a successful year. And now this is just gravy, knowing that you can be in the playoffs and you can, for these young players, they can probably hopefully get the experience of making the playoffs again, because it's a new team from last year, and gaining to be a better team next year and maybe fighting for the top five spots and not just the bottom part.
You're putting the gravy on the fries? You going to the playoffs? Is that what's going to happen for Montreal? What's up?
You know, here, this is poutine country.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
And cheese. So on Sunday, I think they have what it takes to get the result and to make the playoffs. I had put them at the beginning of the year eighth because I knew what Wilfrid could do, but it was the first year. But looking at what they've done, they have the potential. And Kyoto showed he came back in the game. Wanyama started. So you're going to have some of your better players available for a big crunch time moment. So, and it's in Montreal. I see them making the playoffs and winning against Orlando.
Mm. Ale.
Gotta love that gravy. Put some gravy on it. Appreciate you, Patrice. Always great to talk, man.
Yeah, thanks, guys. Always a pleasure. And yeah, decision day. I don't know, but the MLS, it always works out that there's always a game or several games. So
MLS is the, like, it's the Montreal of leagues. All about the drama, baby. Yeah, drama. Exactly, drama. Right. That's what we need.
You keep, as they say, until they talk about you.
Okay, that's the Montreal side. The Orlando side is just as important in this case. Montreal has to win because they're below the line to get in. Orlando does not have to win. If they draw, because all the things we said about the Red Bulls, they would be in on 49 points. And honestly, after what happened to them late on with that goal, I got to imagine things are a little bit, like emotions are on edge, I would think, for Orlando. Because they got to go to Montreal. And they've got to get a result of some sort. If Orlando missed this thing, and we'll talk about it maybe when I do my predictions, that's going to be pretty crazy. What do you see in this game? What do you see from Poppy?
I think it's an Orlando team that we thought would grow over the course of the year to have an established style of how they win games, and they haven't, but they don't need to, right? Montreal needs to win this game. Orlando, with the draw, they're good. And I think that's where you're going to see a lot of this game played out, is Orlando has the pieces to hit on the counter. They have the ability to play through the middle or over the top, whatever it is. I think they'll be fairly comfortable in that style of play. And Patrice mentioned it. DK's been a lot better the last month. He's starting to look like the player we saw last year, who takes guys on the end line, who's getting defenders on his back, who's making runs into the channel, not staying too central. And Chris Mueller's weirdly, but fortunately started to grow a little bit, an assist last week, a goal right before that. So I think for Orlando, my guess is they came out of that Nashville game and said, we were good enough to win and we are going in the right direction. And I think that'll be the message from Oscar Pereja. That'll be the message in this team. This was a group that won in the playoffs last year. So this is a playoff game. Patrice called it a final. They have more experience than this Montreal group does in a game like this. Now I'm not picking them to win this game. I actually think Montreal will get it done. I was impressed by the mentality of the way Montreal played against Houston. And I've said it all year. They have rebounded better than any club in MLS to tough moments. Not just the being away for half the year, but every big loss, they have come back with a good performance the next game, including this week. So I think that Montreal does have enough. I'm interested to see what central midfield looks like. How many minutes do you get out of Kyoto in this game? But it's an interesting one because I could tell you that both teams could feel confident going into this one.
And look, Orlando have two sides of a coin here. One side is if we draw, we're in.
Yeah.
And that's safety. The other side is if we win, we might have a home game. And that might give them the opportunity to do, I don't know, what they would want to do, which is make a deep run, perhaps in Nani's final year. And I'm going to be watching Nani really closely in this game. This is the moment, man. Like, you are the leader of this team from a salary perspective, from a profile perspective. from basically every perspective. This is not on Daryl DK. Like, it's not on Sebas Mendez necessarily individually. More than anybody else, it is on Nani individually to have a big performance. And we'll see if we get it from him. Can we just talk real quick about Georgie, though? Like, in the middle of all of this? Yeah. 14 primary assists this year. That means his pass went to the foot or head or body part or whatever to score the goal. That is more than Carlos Hill. One more. That's incredible. Close your ears, Chicago Fire fans. Mute. Don't listen to this part. What a season for Georgie. What a trade by the by Montreal.
He was worth every penny, and I think we both kind of felt a level of excitement when the trade happened. And he's been what Montreal's looking for. We saw the Rapids sort of have done this as well, of identifying pieces in the league and giving them an opportunity and a platform to grow on that. And think about this. Mason Toys missed pretty much half the year.
I was going to say, man.
Kyoto's almost missed half the year as well in his own way. He hasn't had a legitimate center forward in front of him, and this is what he's been able to do. It's incredible. And I like the idea of the way they play with him, because if he wants to get into the national team, if they're playing this 5-4-1 with him and Torres as sort of dual tens or eights, it's similar to the way the two eights play for the U.S. Do I think he's better than Yunus Musa and Weston McKennie right now? No. Do I think he's better than Roldan in that role? Not really. But if he wants to get in that conversation, this is a really good setup for him to do it in. And it's promising to see that he had the potential, and he has shown that he can do it week in and week out. And now it's just continuing to grow.
Yeah, just 22 years old here. I think, it depending on the role you're asking in those dual eights, I think Georgie offers more than Roldan. Again, depending on what you're asking.
Why?
From that particular player. Huh?
Why?
What do you think? Just a little bit more vision with the ball at his foot. Like, I think Roldan's movement is sort of his strength in that moment. And then, like, efficiency in the final third. And for whatever reason, Roldan just makes things happen, whether it be a PK he draws or the right pass or being in the right place at the right time. I think Georgie's just a little bit better vision-wise in executing that sort of killer ball. Or
to
that
be clear,
ball
the whatever reason is because he's everywhere and he covers an insane
amount.
Yeah,
no, look, I'm not saying he's going to be there over Roldan, but it is what it is. FC Cincinnati.
I think that's legitimate, and I think that's where over the next 5 years it's like, well, how does he fit himself in?
Yep. Got some time. FC Cincinnati, Atlanta United. This one's on ESPN Plus. Cincinnati have the spoon. It's in their possession. They have three of them. You know, if you need one, just ask. Atlanta United are in, as we said, extra time in. Not X on their name in the standings in, but look, they're on 48 points. The scenarios would have to go crazy for them not to get in. We won't take you through all of that. And again, it all goes back to Montreal and Orlando playing each other. So neither of those teams can take full points. And Atlanta at 48 can't be caught by DC and Columbus. So it's basically a goal differential play to keep them out. So they're in. But even though they're in, it doesn't feel like that, like Rob Valentino, early Gonzalo Pineda days.
No.
You know, upward trajectory, you know, like we were all riding the roller coaster and it was like, this is going to be great. And now we're going not straight down, but it's not paying off the way they might have hoped. One British perspective hit us up on Twitter. And now that I read that, I'm like, but he has an MLS logo as his avatar. So I think, well, you know, we can
accept
it.
It's probably Doyle.
Yeah. How bad have Atlanta turned? That's very British of him. Last five games, they've underperformed badly. Last night, they offered nothing going forward. Completely agree with that. They may have limped over the line, but has Araujo burned himself out before the playoffs? Teams often take late season form into playoffs. That's not a good sign for the five stripes. How worried would you be, or are you? Well, you're not, because you're not an Atlanta United fan.
I love the city of Atlanta, though.
That's true. That, so you would like good things for them.
Yeah, I would be. Because the performance against the Red Bulls, and not just from production or quality chances, just pure effort and like sharp energy of this was basically a playoff game, and they came out flat against a team that they have been rivals with over the course of their time in MLS. So I was really let down by that. And I think that there's a worry of understanding how to turn it on at the right moment. And as we've said over the last 3 weeks, understanding how to close games out when you do get the lead. And they haven't had that finishing touch to make it a two-goal lead at any point. And then they haven't been able to defensively see it out. This is the reality of the team this year. It's not Gonzalo Pineda's team. He didn't have a preseason to build it. He does not have a plan for it to go forward. This is the reality of who they are, is they are reliant on the individual moments and quality of their three or four DPs, however you want to call it. And that's just going to be the story the rest of the way. So, yeah, if Barco plays phenomenal in a playoff game, they'll probably win that playoff game. If he doesn't, if Joseph isn't the best player on the field, which feels unlikely at this point, if Marcelino Moreno isn't the best player on the field, they won't win. And I don't think there's anything Gonzalo Pineda can do at this point to change that.
It didn't feel like from the back line into the midfield, they were ever able to deal with, break, avoid the Rebels' pressure and to get Barco, Araujo, or Moreno into the open field. If they can't do that, they are not going to create chances. And if they can't do that, it's going to be Joseph Martinez, a late sub, just running around, having almost no impact on the game. 0.1 expected goals. 0.1. Two shots did nothing in this game against the Rebels. Nothing. And maybe that's a style of play thing. Maybe they'll be better against teams that aren't just going to, like, the moment they pick up the ball or the moment that it's a 50-50, are not going to be in their grill preventing them from playing those balls or having the space that they need to attack. But this is a troubling sign.
But the peak Atlanta, and while they didn't get the results, they wanted that punch from Red Bulls, and they always punched back, right? Like, think about the great regular season games in MLS history, and a lot of them were Atlanta in Red Bull Arena from 2017 through 2019, and they wanted that, and they were ready to punch back, and they were aggressive and physical, because as you said, you come into Red Bull Arena, you know they're coming after you on the press. You have to be ready on every 50-50. You have to be able to physically challenge. And Atlanta was just nowhere close to the level they needed to be in that game. Now, Cincinnati's probably a different test, but in the playoffs, it's hard to say.
Probably a different test. You're very kind. You're a very kind man, David Guss.
But it's hard to say on the road that they're a team that you'd pick.
Yeah. They're probably in, though. So, yeah, good luck to them. See what their seeding is like. They could make a jump in these standings, just like Orlando. If New York City don't get the job done, they could jump up into a home game. That could change their entire postseason chances. TBD. Toronto FC hosting DC United. Pretty straightforward for DC. They got to win, and then they need Red Bulls to lose. So that's really their only scenario here to get in. We'll see if they can do it. They need the Red Bulls to lose, but then I think they also need Orlando to win as well, because otherwise Montreal would make the jump. If Montreal tie, though, then they would be in. Anyway, it's complicated. It probably won't happen for DC.
To be clear, for starters, they need to win, because Toronto just won a Canadian Cup semifinal. They drew against Atlanta on the road last week. I think this is a Toronto team that's sort of okay right now with nothing to lose. And DC has not been good. They have not been efficient. They haven't been clean in the attack, and they have holes in the back. That's just a reality. They will give up chances in this game. So for starters, they need to get 3 points.
Yeah, got to win, and then they need help. You can check the scenarios, and we'll keep you up to date as things happen on decision day. I think that's going to be the funnest part, just to watch the shuffle happen in real time, to be like, okay, sure. DC scored. They're up. Red Bulls just dropped behind. Okay, now we have this. This is where the standings are. Who's in? What does the next play mean? It gives us all the context that makes that day so, so exciting. Toronto FC, though, here's a question from Rob Ditta, who's apparently an Anders fan. He says Sports Viking is a legend. Does TFC stick it out with Josie, or do they consider a buyout this offseason? The man is injured 70% of the time. When he's healthy and in form and focused, he's a goal a game. So conflicted they have to be. Thoughts on that one?
I think it's a tough one. If you can get out, you have to, because you just don't know what you're going to get from him. And now you've got pieces around it in Soteldo and Pasuelo that are win-now pieces. And while Josie's an elite player when he's on the field, you're just not sure that you're going to get a full season out of him. And so in the offseason, you get that one buyout, you get that opportunity. If ownership is willing to do it and then bring someone in, probably not of an equal level, but of quality.
That's the tough part, right? It's like, in a league where you've got to spend efficiently, is buying out Josie and going and then spending more for a non-guarantee a better bet than hoping Josie can find health, which is not a guarantee in any way.
But here's the thing.
And not having to pay a transfer fee and having him integrated in the squad. And let's just imagine Bob Bradley comes. Maybe he knows the best way to get the best Josie.
I would argue the flip, which
yeah,
is
that might
Bob
be the
Bradley
opposite.
Comes. He's a guy who has started everything at center forward besides a center forward over his time, and you give him Soteldo and Pasuelo on the wings and Oso in midfield, and obviously Michael's going to play 750,000
This is,
minutes.
Again, if Bob was to take this job.
I think that if you do get off of the Josie contract, and even if you go and you get a lower NDP in midfield or at center back, that still makes this team better? And then maybe you look around, is there a center forward option that's available to you on no risk? But
or Io.
And I think that's what they'll say, is they have Io. I know no one wants to hear, but they have Peruzza as well, who gets a goal last week. They've had Jaden Nelson, not a true natural center forward, that has given you some minutes. Schaffelberg as well. Like, it feels like with the DPs they do have, if they can solidify the spine a little bit more, they can probably get enough goal scoring to be competitive.
Plan spoiler, though, on decision day are Toronto FC. As you know, all these games at 3:30 p.m. Eastern in the East. Another ESPN Plus game, but a huge one. Maybe the third biggest, I would say. This is a seeding play right here. NYCFC hosting the Union. Philly can lock in the two seed with a win. NYCFC could rise all the way up, potentially, to that two seed with a win, I believe, and some tiebreaker help here. Yeah, they could. Would be wins, and then they have good goal differential. Only Nashville is two ahead on 22, so it depends on the result here. But wins would be their best goal differential or their best tiebreaker play. Should Tati be an MVP candidate, Dave?
Yeah.
He's a golden boot leader. Presented
he
by
He should be an MVP candidate. I have the belief that an MVP should go to someone on a team that is high up in the standings. And so I do think that this last week actually affects how high he can get in my mind. Like, MVP is based off individual performance, but you can't take away the team performance. And so that's where you have people from the Revs and Seattle and KC are in that conversation. They are connected in my mind. They are not separate. And if NYCFC ends up fifth or sixth in the Eastern Conference, I think it's tough to say that he's an MVP winner or maybe even one of the top three.
But if they finish second, it's a
then
much
it's a
different
whole
story.
New conversation.
Because you're looking at his production. Yeah, you can't really complain. You can't be like, oh, well, he's so inefficient. Like, cool, but he's still the best goal scorer in the league on straight numbers right now, and he's
and
got
he
good assist
that
numbers
team
too.
Most of this year.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah.
So if they get up there, I think he will be a top five candidate for sure. I again don't think that he will win. I think it's Carlos Heel's award at this point. But he is the golden boot leader, and he's definitely going to be an MVP candidate. And we now have the NYC FC fans back on board. 2 weeks ago, they were saying 2 weeks ago this Jonathan Sanchez guy was in my mentions being like, bury them, kill them. And now he's in my mentions being like, it's disgusting the lack of respect that anyone on Extra Time has for NYCFC. Between them and Philly, who do you trust more? And how do you think Jim Curtin will approach this game?
I trust Philly more. They've proven that they can win in tough games. They've done it in CCL this year. They did it last year going down the stretch in the Supporters Shield. But what's interesting about this game is that Jim Curtin's gotten performances out of Jack McGlynn and Paxton Aronson. And does he play them in this game to blood them and maybe get them ready for what a playoff game will look like? Or is it Montero and Leon Flock and Baizo and Wagner over Nathan Harriel? And does he go back to the group that he knows very well? And therefore, that's probably the group we'll see in the playoffs. And I think of any coach in this league, Jim Curtin's the one guy who would give those players that opportunity. And Montero has to start. He's the best player on this team. But you can see a space where Paxton Aronson could be the difference, or Jack McGlynn could be the difference in getting them over that hump. The quality they have in the attack, the creativity they have in the attack, doesn't really exist in the rest of this team outside of Ilsenio. And so they're going to be a necessary part of a Philly playoff run if they're able to make one. And so now it's how does Jim Curtin manage getting them ready for that experience?
And how much does he give away against NYCFC, who could be a semifinal matchup, depending on how all the seeding shakes out for the Union? The Union, by the way, will get a home game, 53 points, same as Nashville. Nobody can jump up and pass them in 2 through 4. But it depends down the road if a matchup is against one of those other teams in the top 2 through 4 who would host. So this matters to them as well. Right now they're in second on 53 points. They've got the tiebreaker over Nashville on wins. Their goal differential, though, between Nashville and New York City will not hold up. They have about 7 and 9 less goals than those two teams scored. Final one in the Eastern Conference, Crew Fire. This is one of the two I mentioned that has, well, take that back. I guess the Crew could, the Crew won't. In Extra Time terms, it doesn't have any playoff weight because it's not going to happen for Columbus. The Fire playing for Pride, PFP. What happened with the Fire here? Like, anybody gonna show up? Taylor Twellman's on the broadcast last night for RSL Portland, which we'll talk about in a second, saying that the Fire, I don't know, depends on your perspective, either did their guys a solid who weren't going to come back and said, hey, you got some extra time to go look, or maybe jumped the gun a little bit before the last game of the season and said, hey, you're not going to come back, and now maybe those guys aren't interested. I don't know what the heck is going on here. What do you think?
I think it was an attempt at the first one, and I think it was poorly executed. I think the idea was they wanted to be transparent. They wanted to be a good club to the players and to everyone else, and I think it was probably handled poorly, and that's sort of been the story for the Fire. Like, either way, whatever the decision was, it comes out in a weird way. The players react to it maybe in a weird way. The media perception of it, the fan perception of it, all of it kind of goes wrong. So that's the angle that I think they tried to take. It'll be interesting to see what the other clubs around the league start picking at the carcass here and see what are those pieces that are going to be available.
It will be interesting to see what that starting lineup looks like, because if the deal is that Frank Klopas is not, they weren't going to start these guys in this game, or those guys don't want to play, I don't know. We'll sort of have a little hint as to who might not be back. And we knew that was going to be the case regardless. We knew with those two-year deals and the options and the way this team has performed over those 2 years, that it wasn't going to stay the same. And it certainly is not going to stay the same. All right, time for my prediction in the East. We'll get to Matt Turner and then head out west. Here's what I got going down in the Eastern Conference. Here's what I think will happen, how it will end. Of course, the Revs are number one. I think they will beat Inter Miami. Bruce Arena is on the radio in Boston right now saying that he's gonna play his guys. This is not going to be a rotated squad. Like, nice. You know, they've got to build momentum, another win to get them to 76 points. I think they'll get there. So you see the Revs number one. Obviously, they have a 20-point lead in points on the rest of the conference, which is crazy. I think they'll get to 76 against Inter Miami. Two, I have Nashville. By virtue of what, you ask? Their 18th draw of the season.
Nice.
We're doing it again, baby. We're running it back. More than half of their results will be draws. Right now, it's right at half with 17, but they are doing it again, and that would put them at 8-0-9, I believe, at home on the season. I have NYCFC jumping from fourth to third because I think at home, I think they will beat the Union. They are so good at home, and they're on form rolling right now. It's like a good combination of things for NYCFC. So they beat the Union, which means the Union are now fourth. So two through four go Nashville on 54, New York City on 53, but on win tiebreaker, they're ahead of the Union. Union on 53 points in fourth. So that rounds out your top four in the home games in round one, and then the home field advantage should they keep it rolling for the Reds throughout the playoffs. Then I have Atlanta at five. I just assume that, you know, going to Cincinnati, yeah, that they're going to get a
win.
They're going to get a result there. It would just take a draw for them to be fifth because, and this is the big one, this is this thing that everything hinges on, I have Montreal in sixth. I am with, I'm putting the gravy on the fries. I think, you know what, I just think in Montreal, with the way things are going for Orlando right now, and I just think CF Montreal are going to win the game, and they are going to get into sixth, and by virtue of a draw for the New York Red Bulls against Nashville up to 48 points, they would then have 13 wins to Orlando's 12, who lost. They would be the 7th seed. So the Red Bulls would get in. That is what I think will happen, very unscientifically.
Yeah.
And that would be heartbreaking and even more frustrating for the reasons that we've talked about on this show and on Instant Replay for Orlando City. Okay. That would be a blow.
Yeah. That is, I think a lot, I agree with a lot of that, not all of it. It also means we'd end how we started, which is, I think Red Bull would go to Nashville in the opening game of the playoffs.
It would. Boom. That would be interesting as well. That would mean that your first round matchups in the East are Nashville, Red Bull, NYCFC, Montreal, and Philly, Atlanta.
Tasty.
So that would be pretty good. And then you'd have that 3-4, 5-6 facing off against the Revs, whoever can get out of that, and go on from there. All right, let's chat with Matt Turner about this Revolution team. We mentioned they're hosting Inter Miami, going to have the Supporters Shield celebration. But before we get to Turner, your quick thoughts on the rebrand, Dave. You've lived in Boston. You have a better place to speak of this than I do.
Yeah, it seems like the Revs, you know, they were pretty active about reaching out to the fan base, reaching out to the city about what they wanted to see. And I agree with their concept, which is the Revolution are relevant in the market. It's a known name. And when the team's good, when they make a push, they get people in that building and people know about the club when they're successful. So I understand the idea of keeping the connection. I would have just stuck with the old logo if it was me. But I don't hate what they've come up with, and I think it'll look pretty clean on some different gear. Maybe we'll get a sneak peek as we get to Matt Turner right now, and a lot of it hinges on a new stadium. But for this club, for everything I, you know, track, they're going in the right direction. The youth development's there. They're invested. The training facility's there. They've done really well at the two-team level in USL League One this year. The academy setup is a million miles better than it's ever been before. And they're investing at the first team level and just set a points record. So you can understand now is a time to do it. And in terms of a 3-5 year plan, whatever they started when this conversation began, it's sort of worked out pretty well on every single front. So why not launch this as well?
Yeah, look, I was emotionally attached to the Crayon logo. It's been there for 26 years, the longest of any of the original logos by far. So when that first one got leaked, or the one that is now out got leaked, I was sort of like, meh. But with time, with sort of the immediacy of it gone, I think it's just fine. It's got a lot of really cool elements that the Crayon crest just doesn't have. That one just kind of stands alone. It has to be what it is. That's it. This one seems like the secondary branding that you see, the little, like, the little tree crest with the 96, the fact that they're very focused on the R, that it's Revolution, not New England. I like all that. I think that really, really fits. It reminds me of Boston. So I think they did well on this. And the nice thing is that now the Crayon logo has a chance to win MLS Cup still. This thing isn't coming till like December 15th. So you could still give the original logo an MLS Cup star, how brief it would be. But it would be really, really cool. So congratulations to the Revs. This is the right time to do it. What, if you're going to rebrand, you might as well do it when you're setting points records and have the opportunity to host three games to win MLS Cup and to sell that merch in your stadium as you do it to get ready for next year of this incredible era that you're embarking on, seemingly, with Bruce Arena at the helm. So, yeah, seems like the right time for that. Okay, let's get to Matt Turner. All right, it's an AT&T 5G call to the field, straight out to beautiful Foxborough, where Kalen Carr would like to vacation one day. Matt Turner's with us. What's up, Matt? How's it going?
It's a beautiful time of year for a vacation here, so yeah, we're doing well.
Leaf peeping?
Oh, boy.
That's the big one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that.
You're not a big Leaf guy. You don't, like, you know, I'm driving around Kansas City. I'm in awe. You're just kind of throwing it away.
Listen, yeah. I love a good foliage. I love
Okay,
foliage.
Perfect. Now, when you walked up, you had something on your head. We don't want to spoil things here, but for those on YouTube, they should probably at least see the lid here. We're going to talk about the Shield, the points record, MLS Cup playoffs, etc. But you just got a glimpse. That is the new New England Revolution crest right there. How do you feel about the rebrand?
I'm happy with it. You know, it's a step forward for the club. Obviously, a lot of great memories with the old logo and all that. But I think, you know, to keep things moving and keep this organization, you know, up to speed with things going on in MLS, I think it's good. And I think a lot of thought and care went into the designing of the logo and a lot of care in how they rolled it out. So, yeah, it's great for the club. And I hope that the fans enjoy it as much as the players have.
This has been probably something that maybe you've thought about all year with everything that's gone on for you, both national team and club. But do you think about being a part of history and like what these moments will look like? Like, this is the rebrand, right? This is the logo probably for the future when people look back 20, 30 years.
Yeah, I don't. And I think that's the best way for me to like how I've been able to sort of like keep my head on my shoulders and keep moving forward. You know, just one thing at a time, you know, and I'll take time if there is any time at the end of this year to really reflect and look back on the journey that was this 2021. And, you know, it would be really great if we were able to, you know, do one last thing with this old crest and lift the MLS Cup.
I was going to say, you got to give the Crayon Crest MLS Cup. It's been there so many times. It's had so many disappointments. Like, the last hurrah.
I know. It's got all the makings of it, of a beautiful story. So we'll see if we can make it happen.
Tell me how you guys celebrated the Shield. Because we're getting ready for Decision Day, and that's what this show is all about. And everybody seemingly has stakes. You know, whether it's seeding or just trying to get in and extend their season or jobs or whatever it is. And here are the Revs. You know, sitting, I don't know how many points above everybody else at this point, but 20 points ahead of everybody else in the Eastern Conference. I mean, you guys are playing for more of a points record, for momentum. What does Decision Day mean to you guys, and how did you celebrate the Shield? Was it big time, or was it sort of understated?
Definitely understated for now. I think, you know, we wanted to wait to do the big celebrations. It's a great trophy. I think it's a great trophy for this league, and it really speaks to consistency throughout the season. And it's an important one for our supporters. So we kind of have had like more subdued celebrations. But this Sunday is looking like it's going to be a great day between us and the fans and celebrating the Shield and all that. But that day, decision day, I think there's a lot of things that even though we've had a great season, you think, okay, what is this team really good at? And, you know, it's hard. It's like they're good at winning games. Like, I don't know. There's still so many areas that we can improve upon. And this will be the last time that we get to face another opponent until the conference semifinals. So as good as that is, you know, teams struggle with that in the past with having that first round bye. You know, Philly last year, you know, that we had momentum when we went to Philly last year mm-hmm. after winning the game we won in the fashion we won. So we had that momentum. And so we're cautious. We know we need to get something out of this game and show some improvement.
Have you touched the Shield? Is it in your possession? Is it in the club's possession? Have you seen it?
There's so many rules about this thing that I didn't know about. I haven't even seen the Shield. I haven't touched the Shield. But I think I'll be able to on Sunday, which will be good.
What would one be wish. The one?
I mean, just one wish. Get Bruce Arena's hands on that thing first. After everything he said about the schedule and about the Shield, I need to see Bruce gleefully lift the supporter shield in the middle of all you guys. I want to see it.
There's just no chance. There's just no chance.
Dreams die. Yeah. Dreams die hard.
Okay, not just the Shield, though, the points record. What is it? We've talked about it a ton. What does it mean to you? What do you think it represents?
I think it represents that it's possible in this league. Like we say that this league is built on parity, and it is. You know, if you look at the tables and the lines and decision day, it really is. But if you can take care of business, you know, you can sort of set a new standard or, you know, show that it's possible to win games. I think we won 10 games on the road and 11 at home or 12 at home, 10 on the road. And that's pretty insane record in any league. So it's just another step forward. We try to set a new standard, a new record, and hopefully it doesn't get broken unless it's by us. But, or, you know, it's just, we want to see this league grow. We want to see teams grow. And at the end of the day, we want to get that elusive CONCACAF Champions League. And if that means, you know, we need to have really good teams in MLS and lots of competition, really good players, and these points records continuously being broken is sort of showing that this league is growing in different ways.
This is officially the Matt Turner Show driven by Continental. You're going to bring CCL goals into this for all of MLS?
Exactly. To the promised land we go.
Listen, anytime, guys, anytime.
if he starts talking Leagues Cup, we might just have to just like exchange hosting positions here.
You have to earn that Leagues Cup for, you know, oh my gosh, yeah, the Leagues Cup. I forgot about it. Listen, this is what I'm talking about one day at a time. I'm going to worry about the Leagues Cup in 2023.
Tell me, you said that we've seen this club grow, and we've all seen it from the results and the squad and everything that's happened here, but you really sort of nailed it down here. You guys are good at winning games, and that seems to be what Bruce Arena teams are good at. What is sort of the growth arc to you? Like, what are the biggest areas of improvement, of growth, the difference between when you started with this club and where you see it now?
Yeah, I think it's the never say die attitude. I think that game in Orlando on FS1 like perfectly summed it up. You know, it was a game where we didn't have it. We were struggling a little bit. I let in another soft goal, and we were down 2-0 in a place that we've really struggled over the years. You know, besides the playoffs last season, and then you know you bring in our guys and our DPs, and they come in and they produce and they score goals, and we are able to get a result and almost a winner in that game. And I think it's just the way that we've been wired this season is just to keep going, keep attacking, keep running hard in the box and make things happen, and good things will come. And I think an area of improvement for us is when we're winning, maybe a little bit less of that, you know, maybe especially in the playoffs, you know, get off it a little bit, drop back a little bit and pick our moments. And when we have the opportunities to get that killer two-goal lead, get that two-goal lead. I think that those are two areas, you know, defensively seeing games off and offensively putting in that killer goal.
What's unique about you, your club, and you've alluded to it a couple times, is normally when a team kind of has this first year where they break through, the question is, well, can they win in the playoffs? But you guys went to an Eastern Conference Finals last year and have done that. What did you learn from that run? What are you talking about now as a group of what it takes to get to an MLS Cup?
Yeah, it's funny. We kind of did it in reverse of what you're like. I think we proved to ourselves a lot last year in those games. We learned a lot about our group and how we can win, how we can be solid defensively and allow our Carleses, Adams, and Gustavos to be free up top and to score goals. And then obviously Tejan was a huge part of our playoff run last year, and he kept that momentum going. So I think we took what we did in the playoffs, and our goals were just mainly focused on the beginning of the year and starting strong. And then that sort of rolled into this momentum. And when you're playing Wednesday, a million times, and good, and the energy's good, and the momentum's right, perfect, but we were winning. But there's teams out there or individuals out there who maybe if they're having a rough patch, they don't have as much time on the training field to analyze and to be able to get the work in that they need to. So that was the challenge for this season in general. But obviously, like, we've been able to carry what we did at the end of last year through this season. And we know it kind of, obviously, the Supporters Shield's great, but in 3 weeks' time, all that sort of noise is going to die down, and we're going to have to get it done in the playoffs.
3 weeks. That's a lot of time. How are you guys sort of internally talking about dealing with the break that you will have, because you will also have a bye in addition to the international break? Like, are you scared of losing momentum? Is it a nerve wracking thing, or is it more just like, cool, we're going to be so rested?
No, definitely not the second. It's more of the first. I wouldn't say scared is not the word. It's just more about holding each other accountable during that time and making sure that we're getting the most out of our training sessions possible. Practice games, whether it's inter squad or against someone else, getting the most out of them and taking them very seriously. So that way, you know, when we get our chance to play in the playoffs and teams are already one game deep, we're ready. Because we know that when we played Philly in the playoffs, we were in that mindset and we scored two goals in 25 minutes. And from there, we just cruised through that game.
How much would MLS Cup mean to the club? Like, I know you weren't there for losses,
but you could sort of feel it last year, you know, as we were getting closer, what it would mean to these supporters and to the club. And given everything that's gone on this year and last year and how much we've grown and improved and the rebrand and yada, 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 you name it, it would mean everything.
So,
all right, let's get to the national team, right? Or no, do we have one more on the
No, I was going to go
on the
national
Revs,
team,
Dave?
But I think we have a little bit of a question. First, a unique question, right?
Oh, we heard there's some trivia at U.S. national team camp, and that Matt Turner's teams.
You
just
saw.
Absolutely.
He just went
up.
Into game mode. He heard trivia. He was like,
exactly. Locked in. Okay, so we have a little trivia for you, or Dave
What's
does.
What's your
we'll
trivia
see,
category?
You know.
It's like, what are you good at?
Depends. I'm a big, like, Jeopardy guy, so I don't know, like, random facts here or there. There's some days where, you know, I have to rely on my table, you know? People think that it's all me, but I get the most out of the people around me.
So you're just a good leader. Yeah. It's not that you are the star.
Exactly.
That's what it's all about.
Okay.
Identify strengths. Trust is a big part of trivia.
There was one day where the topic was all about Jamaica, and I had Mark McKenzie at my table. He's Jamaican American.
Boom.
Bingo.
Easiest.
Who makes up the question?
Have you lost any of these?
There's a mental performance coach within the national team. His name's Travis. Great guy.
Okay. So we were going to ask you a question. We were going to do it slightly Boston-based. So here's your question. It's slightly history. What was the day that the British evacuated Boston in the Revolutionary War?
Wow.
No table this time.
Yeah.
You're on your own.
Obviously, the Declaration of... Yeah, no. There's no one in here. Declaration of Independence, July 4th, 1776. Everybody knows that. They didn't leave right away. Or did they leave before that? So... I'm not going to know the exact date. I'm going to give you October 17th, 1775.
I appreciate, you know what, the thought process here? That goes to show why you're so good at this. Now, you didn't get it right. Dave, you can tell the story. You know it better than I do.
So your thought process was slightly correct. They left before the Declaration of Independence because they lost in Boston earlier. But the reason I know this, because I went to school in Boston, is that the city of Boston couldn't figure out how to make St. Patrick's Day an official holiday to let people off work. So Evacuation Day is March 17th, 1776. Therefore, every public employee in Boston gets off on March 17th, which is also the day that St. Patrick died.
I'll never forget that. Well done.
Right, we'll see if it comes up at national team camp.
I feel like you'll Matt Turner's never going to talk to me again. You could see how he sat back.
he's just leaning back in the chair. Exactly. Look, you're going to play a big game against Inter Miami on Decision Day, obviously, and then it's off to Cincinnati for Mexico and then Jamaica after that. This is one of those rare windows where it's not three games, but Mexico is it's the big one. We all know that. Like, ultimately, the World Cup is the goal, but within that, there are games that just matter a little bit more, not in points, but emotionally. This is one of those. What are you thinking about when you think about the national team in that Mexico game right now?
I think, like, it's careful waters that we need to tread with looking past anything or looking too much into one game, because I think first window we learned a lot, and then last window we learned a lot about, you know, how to temper the highs with the lows and to get things going after a win, you know, after a quick turnaround. So obviously the Mexico game's huge, but you can't lose focus on what the overall goal is. And for bragging rights for our fans and for everything, we understand that it's a huge game. So, you know, what we're looking forward to this window is hopefully getting that win. And then from there, you know, learning how we need to turn it around very quickly and get it done in Jamaica as well.
I know you're going to tell us you don't read anything or watch anything, but there's no way you cannot notice what all of us are talking about, which is you and Zach Steffen. Both of you are so different. You're both great at so many things. You're in a battle for one position. Take us inside what that experience is like, what the interaction between you two is like, and the way you see this whole thing playing out.
Yeah, it's just like a tremendous amount of respect between the two of us. Obviously, we have different journeys, different strengths. We play in different leagues. But I think we're on the same team, and we're trying to achieve the same thing. So, you know, whoever Greg decides he's going to play in those games, I know that we really respect one another, and we understand that our role becomes to support the other one and make sure that they're the most ready as possible heading into that game. So, it's challenging. Obviously, you got to make sure you take care of business playing with your club. And then when you show up in training, you know, you got to train well, and you got to show that you should be the guy for that game. And that's where the challenge is. And but at the end of the day, you know, it's Greg's decision, and I respect Greg, and I respect whatever he decides. So, and like I said, I respect Zach as well, and I think he's a great goalkeeper. So whatever they think, you know, the coaching staff thinks is our best chance of winning, I just want this country to get back to the World Cup where it belongs. And this whole thing is what I've realized is so much bigger than just me or just Zach or just one player. You know, it's not about us individually. It's about the team and the country and what we've built over the past few years.
As a young player, obviously you fought and then had to win a first team job at the club level. How is it different with the national team, or is it?
Oh, it's just like a little bit more like things factored into it. Like it's not just about, it's about like your club performance, but also how you've played with the national team in the past. And there's just a few more things like factored into it. But at the end of the day, you just got to take care of what you can control. You can only control so much. So focus on those things and do them to the best of your ability. And then you should be able to be proud of whatever decision is made and feel at rest that you've put your best foot forward. And maybe it wasn't enough, or maybe it was the right amount to get onto the field. And that's what you need to find solace in.
I got to ask you, man, you got to have a good U.S.-Mexico memory. Like, you're in the middle of it now. So you have to say, like, hey, every game, 3 points, get to the World Cup. I completely agree.
Yeah.
But you, like all of us, have to have a U.S.-Mexico memory that's just like the visceral one. Which one would it be?
Gold Cup 2021.
Yeah. You know what? It's easy for me to ask that question. When I don't have a personal experience, and I'm like, yeah, what are the ones from many years past that I would go to? And you're like, well, it's the one that I won, dude.
That one for sure.
Was that game different? Did it feel different?
For sure, yeah. It was definitely a different vibe, different experience. The atmosphere in the stadium was crazy. It was loud, unlike anything I've ever heard in my life. And it was just a surreal experience to win and to lift a trophy. And I've never won anything in soccer in my life. I've never won a team trophy. I've never won individual trophies or awards. So it felt really good to win a trophy and win an individual award and also beat Mexico in the process.
There you go. 1-for-1 beating Mexico in Gold Cup finals. 0-for-1 on extra time trivia. We'll fix that. We'll fix that in the future, Matt. Appreciate you, man.
Yeah, appreciate you guys. Have a good one.
All right, big thanks to Matt Turner for joining us ahead of a big stretch for him, both for club and country. That's the Eastern Conference. Let's go to the Western Conference, Dave. Here is your overview as to what's at stake. Five teams fighting for 3 playoff spots out in the Western Conference. So it's a little bit of a slightly smaller group by one team. Here's what we got as far as the teams in the running. Minnesota, 48 points. Vancouver, 48 points. Galaxy, 47 points. Salt Lake, 45 points. Wasted opportunity for them last night at home against the Timbers. And LAFC, still alive, 45 points. The top 4 seeds are locked. You are not going to get Seattle, Kansas City, Colorado, and Portland out of at least one home game in these playoffs. Portland, thanks to their win, and the rest of them had a big gap regardless. Now, 1-3 is still very, very much in the air. Seattle at 59, Kansas City laid an egg in Austin on 58, Colorado also on 58. Colorado has one less win, but they have fewer losses than either of those other two teams. I'm just throwing it out there, but they have one less win. That's important in tiebreakers. So they would need help from the other two to jump them. But it is still possible that the Colorado Rapids could finish first in the Western Conference. There are also 2 CCL spots at stake in the West. That's because nobody in the East can get up to a point to catch them. We know the Revs have one for the Shield. We know that another one goes to the West winner, but because of the Open Cup, the next one will go to whoever the third place team in the Supporters Shield standings are. So that's between Seattle, Kansas City, and Colorado. There are 2 CCL spots to go around for those teams. Let's start with the game on FS1. This is at 6 p.m. Eastern when these Western Conference games starts. But, of course, you'll be on the second screen, so you'll know exactly what's going on throughout halftime and when this game is going to kick off. We'll keep you up to date on all that. Susanna Collins will be live on site in Los Angeles for this Decision Day watch-along show as well. So she'll have updates for you from this big one. And it's a lot like Montreal, Orlando.
This is the one.
Yeah, it's a lot like that. It's kind of a winner in your end game for both these teams.
Yeah. And I think the first thing that pops out to you when you talk about Galaxy Minnesota is Ozzie Alonso being suspended for this one. And his return to form for Minnesota has been a huge part of their run over the last 2 months. It's allowed Reynoso the freedom to be that attacking piece. I think it's helped Fragapane. It's helped Lode. That's the big story coming into this game. And so I think you're looking at a Galaxy team that's already at a little bit of an advantage in this matchup. And then the other big piece to me is what can Lode do against, it'll probably be Hamalainen at left back. That's been a huge weakness for the Galaxy. The whole back line has been, but mainly now it's been what Johnny Russell was able to do down that wing. It's been what whoever it was for LAFC was able to do down that wing. And I think Robin Lode's a guy who normally likes to come in field. So is it Metzener out there? Is it Reynoso floating wide? Whatever it is, that's where Minnesota is going to key. But I think the loss of Ozzie Alonso might be a little bit too much for Minnesota to overcome in this one.
But if Minnesota draw, they will be in 49 points. Neither Salt Lake or LAFC would be able to catch them. The thing about these two teams, Minnesota and LA, is, yeah, there's a ton of pressure on them. If you win, you are in. But also, if Salt Lake or LAFC don't win, then you're still going to be safe. So they're going to be doing some schedule watching on this one as well. LAFC in Colorado. We already mentioned how much Colorado have to play for in that sense. RSL in Kansas City. Kansas City also playing for the same thing the Rapids are, with knowing that they'll have a break on the other side. It's not that likely that LAFC and Salt Lake will win. Maybe one of them will, and then you could be safe. But that is a big TBD, and that's not the position that you want to be in if you're Greg Vanney or Adrian Heath.
I think it's hard for me to get away from the performance SKC put out against Austin this week. Against a team that doesn't have playoff aspirations, you're looking midweek to secure your spot to be the first team in the Western Conference to guarantee home game, CCL spot, all these things. And it wasn't that they lost. It was that they laid an egg. They weren't in this game for the first 35 minutes.
They were down in the first minute.
For sure, which is fine. Go back and do what you do, SKC. Create a ton of chances. Nothing. Nothing for the first half an hour, 35 minutes of this game. And I think if you're an RSL fan, that's a little bit of life for you. That questionable performance from SKC, maybe it's bounced back from them, but if it's not, there's an opening there for RSL. And both these teams are pretty poor defensively, and they open things up. So this thing could be, if you think about the San Jose playoff game for KC last year, that's what I'm picturing coming up on Sunday.
By the way, Kansas City had their first team lineup. This is not a situation of like, well, we didn't have Shalvey or Russell was out, or like, look, Izzy Mattmarine just continues to be injured. No, this was their guys. Outside Roger Espinoza in the starting lineup, and Remy Walter, I believe you can say he started in place of Roger in that sense, it's Kinda, it's Russell, it's Shalvey, it's Shelton up top, who without Pulido, that's the first choice. It's Zusi, Izzy Mattmarine, Fontas, and Luis Martins across the back. This was a really, really disappointing result for Kansas City in this one. But LA Minnesota is going to be one to watch on FS1. We'll have the rest of it going for you as well. Who could least, in your opinion, afford to miss the playoffs perception-wise between Minnesota and LA? And
I think
the answer is kind of obvious. Yeah, I guess it's kind of, the more I ask the question, right. I'm like, well, it's obvious. It's Minnesota. Like,
And I think there's a decent chance that they do. I think Vancouver, I would be shocked if they don't get a result against Seattle at home. They have been one of the best teams. I thought it was a poor performance against LAFC. It's fine to sit back, but they weren't clean. They weren't effective in the counter. I thought Gold was a step off in terms of his touch, but you still see the effort from him and you still see how active he is. Caicedo, I'd like to see more from him in this game. Maybe this is a chance to swap him and Dahomey out and he gets the opportunity to start here. But I'd be surprised if Vancouver doesn't get a result in this game. So I think Vancouver is getting into the playoffs. I would be surprised as well then if you look at it. And then, sorry. And then, as I said, I think RSL has a decent chance in this one.
Well, then here's the scenario. Here's the scenario for folks out there wondering what the scenario would be to keep Minnesota out. So you would need, first of all, LA would need to win. So let's say LA win. They're up to 50 points. Minnesota's on 48.
You have to say
correct.
The other half.
Sorry, my bad. LA Galaxy win. They're up to 50. Minnesota on 48. Vancouver on 48. Let's say Vancouver get a draw against Seattle. So Vancouver on 49. Minnesota now in seventh. Now they're watching RSL and LAFC. You would need one of those teams to win. If RSL won and got to 48, they would win on tiebreaker, on wins. Mm-hmm. If LAFC won and got to 48 and had 13 wins just like Minnesota, they have a better goal differential than the Loons by 7 goals right now. Then they would get in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, look, there's a lot of domino effect going on based on that one game in both conferences.
Yeah.
Montreal, Orlando in the East, and in the West, Minnesota, LA. Let's quickly talk about that race for CCL spots. We chatted quickly about Vancouver, Seattle, but Vancouver at home this year, at real home, like not in Sandy. 7 wins, 1 loss. Seattle in town. We just saw Nico, Raul, and J-Mo play. J-Mo off the bench, the other two starting on Monday night. Yeah, I mean, I think we kind of summed up the game against LAC for Vancouver. It's a fine result because it sets them up just to get a result at home and get in, but they were not as sharp as they've been in the past. The one counterattack goal they had was great, and they had opportunities to win it. You know, I was screaming at the TV when Dyber does not shoot at all at a 1-1 game on a breakaway. He didn't even shoot. Like, it didn't. That was tough to watch. But they control their own destiny. And Seattle are trying to find momentum and form for those three guys ahead of the playoffs. Meanwhile, Colorado at home against LAFC, they could win the West. And LAFC are playing for their lives. And then Sporting Kansas City home against Real Salt Lake.
I like this matchup for Colorado. I think you're looking at an LAFC team that's going to open up and come after you. They leave gaps. They leave holes. You've got Barrios, who can be dangerous over the top. You've got Marc-Anthony Kay starting to feel comfortable floating underneath him and finding his gaps. This is a revenge game for him. You got to think there's something more in it for Marc-Anthony Kay. And then Nnamdi is the question mark for them of, is he healthy enough? Can he get close enough to give you something in this playoff run? Because that could be that final piece and quality that gets him over the top, similar I talked about with Aronson and McGlynn for Philly. So I like this matchup for Colorado. I think they get a win on Sunday. You put that pressure on Seattle and on SKC. Everything we've seen from Vancouver is that they will be aggressive. They will be rocking at home for this game. I'd be surprised if Veselinovich doesn't come back into this team along that back line to solidify things next to Youngworth. And then you've got pieces that are playing with confidence and look really good at home. So I think this is set up for Colorado or SKC to be able to take first place in this Western Conference to get that CCL spot. And I think it would be cool to see this Colorado team in CCL next year because they will be very similar to what they are now. And so often the issue with CCL is, well, we've got new players, we've got a new group, and we're not ready to hit the ground running. I think this group is going to look very similar, and you can just kind of build off that. And maybe this is an incentive to buy that number nine or find that number nine to make a CCL run.
And maybe some motivation behind that too. Like, this is our goal. This is what we're going for. Or maybe even, hey, we're this close to MLS Cup, because at this point, given their results, they are. There are three teams in this league this year that have one or fewer losses at home. The Rapids are one of those teams. The Revs and Nashville are the others. If LAFC lose this, in my opinion, it's on two things. Naive defending, which we saw this week against Vancouver. You know, they should not have allowed the goal that they allowed to Christian Dahomey. Just Sebastian Ibiaga dove in and got punished for it. But that's been all year for them, naive defending. And then not finishing their chances. Yeah. I think they had like 2.8 XG in this game, and that's they scored one goal. Chicho Arango had some chances you'd expect him to finish. It was sort of a microcosm for their whole year. And then Vela comes off the bench and plays 19 minutes and has moments, but there's not enough of him to make the difference for LAFC. So, yeah, huge one there, no doubt about it. How about this? Let's talk RSL, because Sporting Kansas City we covered with Austin, and let's start with the positive, because there are a number of negatives recently for RSL on the results front. Our Continental Tire Celebrating Soccer moment of the week goes to only one man, used to have the dreads, no longer has the dreads, but will always have his number retired at Real Salt Lake. Kyle Beckerman honored in this game against Portland, which RSL lost 3-1, unfortunately. You know him from all those years in MLS, going way back. I think, Mutiny to then also Colorado, and then, of course, switching sides in the Rocky Mountain Cup to RSL and becoming an absolute icon there. Six-time All-Star, MLS Cup champion, 58 U.S. national team caps. They put his likeness on the field. Oh. Like, and I'm not just saying, like, they put, like, they, like, did Beckerman the words.
No, you think it is Kyle Beckerman covers ground. Take a look at that field.
Yeah, oh my God. It is a spitting image in grass mowed into the field of Kyle Beckerman. It is a portrait. Like, most people couldn't draw it that well or even take a photo that well, and it is in the grass. Do you have any thoughts on this moment for Beckerman and what Beckerman meant to RSL as well as to Major League Soccer?
Yeah, I was watching the interview at halftime he did with John Champion and Taylor Trollman, and just thinking about who he is and what he's meant. And for me, as someone who's watched this league grow and cares about it, the relevance, the power that RSL was because of him in a large part was unprecedented, I think, in Major League Soccer. And it's a large reason that the league's been able to grow. And you talk about the big moments in MLS and, you know, the signing of a David Beckham and what Toronto FC built. But as a fan on the East Coast going to NFL stadiums and watching teams that maybe people in the city didn't know when they were playing and what was going on, to look over and watch what was going on at the Riot and the group that RSL put together, and not just the CCL run, but the overall quality from top to bottom, that was one of the key moments for MLS to build off of. And you need that team that is kind of, at times, the enemy or the Goliath for other teams to come after, but for the league, they really needed, I think, a team that was a power in their market and a team that you always knew you were going to get quality soccer and quality results from in quality atmosphere. And so I think Kyle Beckerman being the backbone of that team for so many years is huge to the growth of this league. And then, of course, what he went and did for the 2014 World Cup team, both in qualifying and at the final tournament, is massive as well. And it's one of the nice things that we're starting to hear, that a guy like that, he's going to stay in the game, and he's already coaching at the D1 level, and you want to see that next generation have that opportunity to emulate them. And there's a lot of uncertainty right now at RSL, but Kyle Beckerman was part of some of the great groups in MLS history, and it's something I think that RSL will always be connected to.
He has the most minutes played in the history of this league for a field player. 41,161. His compadre Nick Raimondo is number one, has 5,000 more minutes played. But that just goes to sort of the ubiquity of Kyle Beckerman in this league. You always saw Kyle Beckerman on the field in MLS for basically 20 years. He was there. Always. And he was iconic, whether it be in the way he looked or the way that he played or in the teams that he led, because those RSL teams that we're talking about were iconic. They might have, look, had they gotten two or three more trophies that they were on the very brink of capturing, we might be talking about that team as arguably the best team in league history with what they did.
And I still, it was the, and I still have them in that conversation because of the runs and the quality of soccer that they played.
But we've talked a lot on this show, and certainly we did it even more so during the pandemic, about making sure that you remember the past, that you remember the people that that laid the stones that you're walking on now, that you remember the icons, that we celebrate those icons, and when their time has come, we create them. And I think that's what this moment is for Kyle Beckerman. So congratulations to him. Congratulations to RSL on that moment. Tough for RSL on the results side. Dave, just give us a summation of what you think of their recent results, because they had a chance to control. They could, if they win, they're in.
Yeah.
At home, if they win, they're in against the Timbers, and they just didn't.
They're a group that loses big moments, and Pablo Mascherini's made them super entertaining because he opens the game up. But they individually are not better than a lot of teams in this league. And so you need it to be better than the sum of their parts. And I think opening up a game and making it a lot of one-on-one moments is tough. And you look at Eric Holt and Justin Glad having to defend against Sebastian Blanco and Cade Cowell in the open field.
They knew. They just lost like 6-1 to the Timbers. You don't let the Timbers have space in the open field.
But at this point, Pablo Mascherini can't change it, because he's too far down this road and the season's at its end. So I think that's what you're seeing. I guarantee this. It's going to be fun in KC with them because, as I said, they just let it go. And there is talent in this attack in Rusnak, in Dami, Anderson Julio off the bench, Aaron Herrera coming up from the back, Brody as well down that wing back spot. So it'll be fun to watch. And I think it would be cool to see this group make it to the postseason. And I think either way, you have to commend the players and the coaching staff in the front office at this club that they've been able to go through what they've gone through and punch above their weight.
I agree. Just to be here is a pretty incredible accomplishment. I mean, most of us, myself included, thought RSL was going to be at the bottom of the West
preseason.
I mean, I just didn't. It didn't seem to me that there was a path for them with all the uncertainty to be anywhere but there. But here they are, banding together. Andrew Nuzzo hit us up and said, did Albert Rusnak have the quietest double-double in goals and assists in league history? I don't know the answer to that question, but congratulations to Rusnak, because beginning of the year was real tough for him. The fans weren't happy. He wasn't producing. He got it together as well. Been a big season for him. We'll talk about some of these teams that either on the brink or are limited more once their fate is decided. Timbers have Austin FC this weekend. They can lock. They have a playoff spot locked up, but they could get. Yeah, I mean, they could.
They can't move.
They could basically. I don't even know. There's nothing. There's nothing truly for them to play for, right? I mean, like if they win, they still would have more points than everybody below them if it was to come to a head-to-head to have home field advantage. But if they win, they still wouldn't have head-to-head home field against Seattle, Kansas City, or Colorado.
How they can't move. In eight different ways.
They can't.
They're locked in. But San Jose FC Dallas. And again, Sebastian Blanco, when he's on, they can go to MLS Cup. If he's not, then they're probably in trouble.
San Jose FC Dallas is a game that is also being played on decision day. So enjoy that one as well. It might be our last look at Ricardo Pepi, though.
Yeah.
In Major League Soccer. So that's something to keep an eye on. We will, of course, be doing that on the second screen. If you don't want to do it yourself, we'll have some highlights on there as well from the big moments around the league. So if you're watching your game, we might pop in and say, hey, Ricardo Pepi scored a goal. You can watch it with us. Give us your predictions for the West. How do you think this is going
to
end up?
I think I've alluded to it in most of the matchups. I think the LA Galaxy beat Minnesota at home. That moves them into the fifth spot. I have Vancouver getting a draw at home against Seattle. And that moves them into the sixth spot, solidifies them in the playoffs. And here's my curveball. I have RSL going to KC and getting a victory, which would move them
to
seventh. It would give them a tiebreaker in wins over Minnesota, and that would put them in the final spot in the playoffs. On the flip side, if those results were to happen the way I said, I think Colorado beats LAFC. They go number one. I think Seattle goes number two, SKC number three, and of course, Portland locked in at number four. So there it is.
Wow.
There's the insanity.
Wow. I did not think that after this performance at home against the Timbers, and look, I'm sure Peter Vermees laid into his guys after that. I did not predict that.
Listen, if it's right, I'm going to look like a genius. If it's not, I'm going to look like an idiot. Either way, I am who I am.
There you go. All right, those are our thoughts on Decision Day. Make sure you tune in Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. The Eastern Conference goes first on ESPN. Of course, all the games that are not on national TV on ESPN Plus, and I'm assuming that ESPN will do a ton of jump-ins. But if you don't want to wait for them and you need a second screen, which, let's be honest, you do if you've made it to this point of the podcast, we'll be doing it on MLS channels, MLSsoccer.com, and the MLS app, YouTube, and Facebook. Fire us up on your phone, on your laptop. Have us to the side. Don't even have to watch us. Just listen. If we start yelling, you know something important happened, yeah. And you can see the standings 24/7. It'll be on the screen the entire time. Update live. And that will, of course, be determining playoff spots. We'll be talking about it as it happens for like 5 hours. So come hang out with us. Use the hashtag Decision Day Live. We'll take questions. We'll chat with you on the YouTube chat. We will we'll just try to do what we've done in the past, which is experience Decision Day together. It is probably the best day of the year from a regular season perspective. And it is always more fun to experience those things with a bunch of people that love what you love, which obviously is Major League Soccer. We'll end it here, and we'll have more on the U.S. national team on CONCACAF World Cup qualifying in the coming days and weeks, because Mexico is coming, and we know that's a big one. Roster's out, 25 guys for Greg Berhalter. I think Canada's coming out, what, in the net tomorrow maybe, yeah. Dave? I don't know.
It sounds like it'll be Friday.
Yeah, so we don't have John Herdman's group, so we'll talk about them later. In, Reggie Cannon is in. He's only played 2 games with Boavista, one of them a very brief 17-minute appearance against Porto. Joe Scally is in. Sam Vines is in. Jesus Ferreira is in as well. Two appearances, 2 goals for the senior team for Jesus, and he is in. George Bello out. Lucas De La Torre out. Serginho Dest out, but he's injured, they say. Matthew Hoppe out. Shaq Moore is not in this one. Jesse Zardes is injured, so he is out. And John Brooks is out. Before we get to Brooks and his comments, and also just try to unpack that one a little bit, what do you make of the ins and outs from Greg in this particular roster?
I think you look at a team, so you've got injuries, which affects you in a way. I think you're looking at a team where he's going to play the same 11 both games if it goes the way he wants it to. And so I think you're looking at a group where he brought his best 11, and then it's how do the rest of the pieces fill in around that? And center forward's the big conversation. You can't tell me anyone else deserves to be there right now. And so Ricardo Pepi's the starter. He should, if things go right, start both these games. And then you've got flexibility in Jesus Ferreira and Tim Weah as backups to him. And John Anthony Brooks made the statement himself about what went down. But either way, he's not a starter right now for this national team. So I think there's some risk in here. And you're looking at young guys and Scally and Busio getting call-ups instead of maybe some experience in those spots. But your hope is you don't really need them for this group, and they could be game changers off the bench.
Super excited to see Joe Scally in. I'm very curious to see how Greg uses him. I would expect, you know, I don't know, the expectation, like the logical thing would be that they would ease him in, but he didn't really need time to be eased in necessarily to the first team with Mönchengladbach. I know he had been there for a while at that point and sort of earned it, but once they dropped him in, boom, he was off and running. Maybe he's a guy that could jump in. I don't know against Mexico, but maybe Jamaica, but I like to see him there because he's building something really special in his career. Sam Vines, like that one. Steady Eddie at left back, now playing a lot more in Belgium and doing well. Jesus Ferreira is super interesting, yeah, to me. He's been in form. Like, if you're talking about attacking form, he's been in it. And Greg thinks he's a 9. And if Greg thinks he's a 9, awesome. Or if he's a second, if he's off the bench to play under Pepe and they have chemistry in a time you need a goal, okay. I'd like to see how that's going to work. Reggie's a little bit more puzzling to me just because he still hasn't really been playing much. But, hey, do you?
But if Dest is hurt, it's kind of between
Reggie and Shaq. Yeah, and he's got experience he's got experience in big moments. Yeah. Reggie does, against big teams at CONCACAF. So I get
again,
that.
I think DeAndre Yedlin starts against Mexico. And if he plays anywhere to the level that he can, he probably starts against Jamaica as well. So you're looking at Reggie Cannon as a safe option because he's been there before, especially in a group where you bring Vines and Scally in who have no experience in a setting like this.
Brooks's statement, which I'll just quickly read the first 2 sentences of because I think it was very interesting. You go check it out. Here it is. Quote, in life and in soccer, nothing is ever handed to you, nor should it be. The decision to leave me out of this camp isn't surprising, given some of my recent performances for the national team that aren't up to my standards. My job's now to work hard and be the very best I can be. I feel great about this week's Champions League performance and my recent play with Wolfsburg, and I'll keep building there with my goal of helping the U.S. reach the next World Cup.
Yeah.
Is it an overreaction to you that he's not here?
No, not really. when you look at a team and you have so few camps and so few opportunities, he has not been good enough, as he said. And so you're looking at a team where you have Miles Robinson locked in as a starter, and Walker Zimmerman and Chris Richards are probably the other two options. So if you brought Brooks, which I think I would have, he's the fourth option
I would have
on this group. You'd think you'd want him to find a way to work and be comfortable in this group, but he's acknowledging it. Everything he said is what we would say about him not getting called in. And so he understands the scenario and he understands the situation. Either way, he's not a starter right now for this team. So you're talking about a guy who is a backup. Now, a starter in the Champions League and a top two team in the Bundesliga being a backup.
Yeah, man.
The U.S. men's national team. It's crazy what we're talking about here. But I think it's exciting, and I think the performance of Chris Richards against Costa Rica is a big part of this as well.
I mean, it's only two games, so in some ways I understand that. But I just think your best-case scenario going to the World Cup is to have an absolutely informed John Brooks. I don't know. Maybe this is sort of a shot across the bow of saying, hey, get it together for the national team. But his performances recently for Wolfsburg have been pretty good from what I've seen. I don't watch every game. I'm not, like, sucked into the John Brooks, like, Wolfsburg vortex. But I don't know. At least at that fourth one, I would think that Brooks has earned that. That's just me. How about this last one here? Christian Pulisic's role. I don't think you can start him against Mexico. I think that would be insanity, given that he basically hasn't started a game since, August. What, last international break? I can't see it. I think he's a super sub, and thankfully for the U.S. and Greg Berhalter, Brendan Aaronson's been really good. Tim Weah has been effective in his moments and I think deserves a shot to start. And then if you want to go, again, I don't want to use the phrase in the wrong way, like, steady Eddie, Paul Arriola, you know what you're going to get.
Well,
like, against a team like Mexico,
it doesn't matter.
He's going to be up for that.
Greg Berhalter is comfortable starting Paul Arriola in a World Cup.
Yes, correct.
That has been established. So you've got three starters there if you're Greg Berhalter. And so you have the opportunity with Pulisic to bring him in and see where he's at. We don't know what he'll do for Chelsea this week. Greg Berhalter talked about watching him with that group. Your hope is he gets a start for Chelsea and gets a number of minutes, and then you could see how he reacts. I understand your point of view. I have said this over every single window so far in World Cup qualifying, and I don't think I've been proven wrong. Christian Pulisic is as close to a must-start for Greg Berhalter that probably exists. Maybe Tyler Adams. If Pulisic is healthy and says he can go, I think there's a decent chance he starts against Mexico because he is the leader of this team. And there are very few leaders in this group, and I think Pulisic holds that role. I'm not saying I would do it, but I would not be surprised if he gets the start. And if he can't, then you are right in that you've got Christian Pulisic off the bench in two games against two teams that are not going to want to see him come in as the game's going along. And so I think there's a ton of flexibility for Greg Berhalter in this group. Weah can play as a center forward. He can play on the wing. You've got Jesus Ferreira, who's flexible as well. You could put Leggett and Roldan at either of those wings as well. Not that it's really how Berhalter sees this team. So it makes a ton of sense to bring him in. And I wouldn't be shocked if he starts.
I just want to be clear as I look at my desktop, which is Christian Pulisic shushing Altri fans, that if he is able and he can be effective in a starting role against Mexico, I would prefer to see him in that role. But it is,
you're not going
to
get a guarantee. That's the thing.
It is a yeah, for sure. You're going to have to go on your gut if you're Greg Berhalter. If he comes to you and says, I can do this, and you've seen in training, you're like, oh, maybe he can do this, you have to go on your gut. And the nice thing is if he can only do, I don't know, even like 50 or 55, 60, you have those other quote-unquote starting caliber wingers that you could bring on for him if you need to get him off the field, or if the game demands something else, or if he's just not up to the pace. But that's a pretty big risk against Mexico in your home match.
So here's the thing. With five subs, it's less of a risk. And true, that's the other element that has changed a lot of this. And in only two games, you kind of have more to play with. So in the past where you'd say, I can guarantee a good 30 minutes from this player, he's coming on in the 60th. Nowadays, you could say, let's start him. Let's see if we can set the tone early in Cincinnati. Let's get the crowd into this. Let's have our captain lead us out there. And at halftime, if you need to make the sub, you don't waste the moment. You make one of your subs. You've still got four more subs. And it's not like you need to cover 270 minutes of travel and play over the course of this window.
Yep. All right, we'll talk more about this in the coming days and weeks, as
boom,
I said.
Baby. We got MLS decision day. We got playoffs. We got USMNT, Canadian MNT. My cup runneth over.
Yeah, the only person who's unhappy right now is Anders.
Because he wanted you off.
He's like, I freaking told you. I told you. Stop the show 20 minutes ago, but we can't stop. Won't stop. Decision day is here Sunday, 3:30 p.m. Eastern. Fire up ESPN for Nashville Red Bulls, and then get your second screen, whether it be your phone, your laptop, your iPad, whatever it is, set up for our watch-along show, because we'll have highlights, we'll have live standings, we'll have all the goal alerts, we'll keep you up to date minute-to-minute as to what's happening, and we'll have fun. You'll get to watch with somebody else. If you're going to watch by yourself, what's better than having somebody to watch, which we'll be
everyone's
there.
Everyone's going to have a moment coming up on Sunday where they say, crap, how do I deal with all this? How do I intake all this information?
Yep.
We solved that problem for you, baby. We got you.
Bingo.
Just come on
we're
over.
There. We're not even taking bathroom breaks.
Me? Never. Never no,
been told
it.
That's against the rules.
I'm not eating from now on. I'm fasting.
Figure it out.
I am fasting.
The fast is on. Yeah. The fast is on. We'll see you on Sunday, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your week.